what will the resignation of House Speaker John Boehner mean for the future of the Republican Party, for national legislation, and for the presidential election? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will ask our guest, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Bill Ballinger, the editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter. He's a former Michigan State Representative and Senator, and he served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare under President Gerald Ford. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
So first off, what did you make of House Speaker John Boehner's resignation? What was your reaction?
I was shocked, just as I think everybody was. Nobody saw it coming, even though there's been rumors off and on for a couple of years that he would either retire at the end of a term or quit or something, but it never happened. And when he finally did pull the trigger, I think it caught everybody off guard.
Yeah, well, what do you think pushed him to do it?
Well, apparently there was going to be a vote forced by this block of some 40 very conservative members of the House Republican Caucus on retaining him as Speaker. The Speaker, remember, is elected by all the members of the House. There's a vote by every member. And so you would think if you have all the members of your own caucus and you're in the majority behind you, there shouldn't be any problem. But the problem is if these 40 recalcitrant Republicans voted against re-electing Boehner as Speaker or allowing him to continue as Speaker, he would have had to have gotten votes from Democrats to keep him in the job. And the Democrats might well have done that. They might have said, you know, we'd rather have John Boehner than who might be his replacement. But to have a Speaker elected or allowed to continue based on votes from the minority, and he couldn't even command near unanimity from his own caucus, would have been embarrassing. It would have probably created a big mess for a while in the House. And, you know, if there was a situation where he simply could not get the votes either from the Democrats or from enough of his own caucus to be elected, you know, there would have been a vacancy in the speakership. He would have been voted out, but that doesn't mean somebody else would have been voted in to replace him. Whoever that person was would have had to be amenable to a majority of the members, Republican and Democrat. And again, the Republicans would be right back where they started. They'd have to unite behind somebody other than Boehner as their candidate. Now, practically speaking, maybe that's what's going to happen right now with Kevin McCarthy. The speculation has already started. He's announced he's the majority leader right now, the number two position in the Republican caucus, that he's going to run, and he has to get a majority. That's 218 votes. He's got to hope that many of these very conservative Republican members who are unhappy with John Boehner will give him, Kevin McCarthy, at least a chance.
Yeah, is Kevin McCarthy not considered conservative enough for these very conservative caucus members?
Well, there's some suspicion about that, I think, among some of the more conservative members. But on the other hand, I think they're a little bit chastened now, these conservative members, because they realize they are a little bit like the dog chasing a car. They've caught it. Now what do they do? I mean, John Boehner is out, but what are they going to do? Continue to vote down anybody that emerges as a possible replacement?
Yeah. Well, Boehner said on CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday that there are false prophets in the conservative wing of the Republican Party who push hard for strategies that Boehner said would never work, like shutting down the government to get rid of Obamacare. How difficult a position was Boehner in, given the political makeup of his own party?
I think he was in continually a difficult situation, almost from the time he began as Speaker back in January of 2011. I think he's faced a constant battle, and I think it's gotten even more intense as time has gone on. I don't think there was ever a time when he could rest easy that he had a commanding influence and affection from his own caucus unanimously. And I just think it reached a point where at this time he thought, you know, if there really is a vote on the House floor to oust me, even if I survive it, it's just not worth staying on.
Yeah. The conservatives, the very conservative members of the caucus, want a government shutdown over things like Obamacare or, for that matter, federal funding for Planned Parenthood?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's one issue after another. It's, you know, could be raising the debt ceiling. All these things have come up in the past, or they're upon us right now. And they're going to keep on coming. Some people are saying, you know, it isn't even necessarily John Boehner's fault that these situations occur and that he's thrust in the middle of the situation. Maybe it's the Senate. Maybe it's Mitch McConnell who is as much or more to blame as John Boehner. Some people contend that he's been even more accommodating to minority Democrats in the Senate than Boehner has been in the House. And, of course, there's a reason that McConnell has to be accommodating, and that's the so-called 60-vote threshold in the Senate to cut off filibusters, which Boehner doesn't face in the House. All you need to do to cut off debate in the House is 50% plus one. In the Senate, you got to get 60%, and because of that, McConnell has a very, very tough job over there. There are some things that he might have been able to do in the past few weeks on a number of issues to stand up to the Democrats that he has not taken, that he has not done, and some people fault McConnell more for those failings than they do Boehner for whatever difficulties Boehner's had in the House.
Boehner announced he's resigning, calls for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to do the same have been
right.
coming in hard and fast. Do you see him following suit?
Well, I mean, we'll have to wait and see how things play out if and when Kevin McCarthy or whoever is the new Republican Speaker turns out, how he operates, how he cooperates with McConnell, how things seem to go for the Republicans in the Congress vis-a-vis President Obama in the next weeks or months. And if they don't go any better, and if it's as much of a muddle, and if the restive conservatives are as angry as they are or have been right now, there may be calls for McConnell's head.
Help us understand a little bit of this this anger and this frustration from conservative Republicans. I'm hearing things like even Bobby Jindal during the last GOP presidential candidate debate said he was more angry at members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, than he was at Democrats.
Yeah, because, well, Bobby Jindal, let's look at him individual. I mean, he's running for president. And what happens, I think, with a lot of these candidates running for president is they start acting and saying things that are more extreme and more far out than anything they've ever said or done up until this time while in office themselves. Bobby Jindal has been governor of Louisiana for almost 8 years, and by the way, before that, he was a member of Congress himself. He actually served with John Boehner. And you never saw or heard stuff like this from Bobby Jindal, but I think Bobby Jindal is a barometer for public opinion as he sees it in the Republican electorate facing all these presidential candidates. The Republican electorate, as I think we've seen, is very angry at Republican performance in general, particularly at the Congress. If you lump together the votes, or at least, let's put it this way, the showing in polls by Donald Trump and Carly Fiorina and Ben Carson, who are the three real outsiders in the race, none of them have ever served in public office, that's a majority of public opinion in a Republican primary right now nationally. And Bobby Jindal sees that, and he and some of the other conservatives like Ted Cruz and maybe Rand Paul are saying, look, we have got to appeal to this anger and frustration and anti-establishment feeling among Republican voters who are getting ready to vote in these Republican primaries and caucuses state by state. And we've got to start taking positions that are maybe more outspoken and extreme than anything we've ever said before. And I think that's what you're hearing from Bobby Jindal.
Yeah. But does he have a point when he says, hey, you know, we elected Republican majorities in both the House and the Senate, yet we still don't advance any of these bills?
Well, yes, he has a point. And, I mean, that is why conservatives are frustrated. I mean, I think the Republicans have been cowed into acceding to the president's dominion over the political and governmental process in Washington. That is to say, they're not getting bills to him or sending bills to him that they could, where they're pretty sure he'll veto them and there's going to be a showdown, but they say, so what? Bring it on. At least people will see we're trying to do what we were elected to do. Instead, Republicans apparently are so afraid of public opinion turning against them if they wind up forcing a government shutdown that they are loath to bring these matters to a head and send them to the president. And so they back away. And, you know, it's useless to huff and puff about what you're going to do if you get an elected majority in Washington if you're unwilling to take the steps that are going to, you know, create controversy and possibly affect public opinion adversely to your party. You've got to be willing to take that gamble and be bold. And the conservative voters out there, Republicans, are angry that the Republican members of Congress that they've elected in the majorities in both the Senate and House apparently are unwilling to ever take a gamble or ever try and force the president to back down or ever force, you know, a government shutdown or anything else. For instance, let me just give you another example. Republicans are in the majority in the Senate. They could invoke the so-called nuclear option. They could change the rules of the Senate and take away the 60-vote threshold and just start operating on a simple majority basis like the House. If they did, the Republicans, if they all hang together, have got 54 members. Are they willing to do that? No, apparently. And as far as the Senate, as far as Republican voters are concerned, they should do that. Do whatever it takes. That's the attitude of the voters, but that's not the attitude of those governing for the Republicans in the Senate and House in Washington.
We are talking about the future of the Republican Party. Where do you think the Republican Party is headed, given House Speaker John Boehner's resignation? And how about the rise of the outsider GOP presidential candidates? We welcome your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Bill Ballinger, the editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter, and this is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Bill Ballinger, editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter. Bill Ballinger is a former Michigan State Representative and Senator, and he also served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare under President Gerald Ford. And we are talking with him about the future of GOP politics in light of the resignation of House Speaker John Boehner. And we're welcoming your thoughts and your questions about the future of the Republican Party, about the future of national legislation, the operation of government. The government apparently won't be shut down over federal funding of Planned Parenthood this week, but what about December? We did have Wisconsin Congress member Glenn Grothman on the show yesterday. He was a state senator who was considered one of the most conservative members of the state legislature on the show yesterday. And he said there will be no shutdown. He says the public gets mad when, but then funding proceeds anyway. Grothman says there needs to be a Republican president and a Republican Congress in order to defund Planned Parenthood. So he is saying, predicting Bill Ballinger, that there will be no government shutdown over this, though he thinks Planned Parenthood should be defunded. That can't happen unless there is a Republican president. What do you say?
If Glenn Grossman says that, who am I to disagree? I think he's probably got a better idea than I do, and I would tend to think he's right. And if he was one of the more conservative members of your state Senate, and he probably still is a very conservative member of the U.S. House, I think, you know, he is basically espousing what I've been saying all along this morning in our conversation, and that is, the Republicans are just loath to do anything that will cast them in an obstructionist image to the voting public. They don't want to look to the American people like the party of no when it comes to government, saying we're willing to shut down everything if we don't get our way, even though you could make an intellectual case or a good case based on your understanding of how the legislative branch of government works that, in fact, they're not doing any more to shut down the government than President Obama is. But the perception out there is that the Republicans are to blame because they are the party of small and limited government. And a lot of Republicans, I don't know whether that includes Congressman Grossman or not, have said from time to time that they would not be unhappy if the government was a heck of a lot smaller than it is right now, and that maybe parts of it were shut down permanently. And if that's the image that the public has out there, the Republican Party, then the Republicans have got to either stand or fall based on whether the public likes a party with that attitude. The Democrats are associated with big government, more spending, more power to the government, and they're on the other side of the argument. So right now they're enjoying what the Republicans are conflicted over.
We have full lines. Let's go to the phones. Mark in Appleton joins us. First time, Mark.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I have to say, the people who are complaining about the filibuster and not getting everything that they want now, I doubt that the 4 years that the Republicans, when the Senate was a Democratic majority, that these same people were complaining about the use of the filibuster on a daily basis. I mean, the use of the filibuster exploded under Mitch McConnell's leadership. And these people weren't complaining. I certainly was, as someone on the other side, with a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House of Representatives and a Democratic president, that nothing could get done because of this minority. And so there really seems to be a lack of legitimacy among these people for the fact that Obama was reelected, that we have Obamacare, people voted for Obama because we like Obamacare, and all of these other issues. And so it's very frustrating. Frankly, it's just basically undemocratic because there's just a complete lack of respect for the fact that you could have a difference of opinion and that you need to have the votes. And when you don't have the votes, you move on. Same as for threatening to shut down the government over Planned Parenthood. I mean, it's this constant threat, and it's just, you know, it's very destructive.
This is an anti-democratic and destructive, Bill Ballinger?
Well, I think what your caller is saying is really a matter of partisan politics more than anything else. I'm not disagreeing with your caller. But I will say he points out that when the Democrats had the majority in the Senate, it was the Republicans who were using the filibuster to obstruct what the Democrats wanted to do. And in fact, Harry Reid, the Senate majority leader then, Democrat, did invoke the nuclear option, as I think we remember, a year or so ago to get some judicial appointments by President Obama through the Senate. He basically said, we're going to suspend the 60-vote filibuster cloture rule and just make it a simple majority vote on these nominees. And the Republicans cried foul, and they said, you'll rue the day you ever did this. I don't know why the Republicans simply can't restore that. But the point is, whoever is in the majority takes full advantage, or tries to, of their majority status. And who's ever in the minority, whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats, they do everything they can to gum up the works. And it all depends who is in the majority, who is in the minority. And what the Republicans have been saying for the last several years to their voters is, well, you know, we don't have control of anything in Washington. The Democrats in 2009 and 2010 had the presidency in both chambers of the legislature. So the Republicans got control of the House, and they said, well, okay, we've got control of the House. We can make things a little more difficult for the Democrats now, but we still don't have the Senate or the presidency. And then in the next election, or two elections later, the Republicans get control of the Senate again. And now they're saying, well, you know, we've got the House and Senate, but we still can't get anything done because we've got a Democrat in the White House. We got to get rid of him. I think a lot of the Republican voters and conservative voters out there who are unhappy about things in Washington are saying, look, the way things are going, you know, the Republicans could win the presidency in 2016. They'll have control of everything. And they're still not going to get anything done. They're still not going to change things. What will their excuse be then? We're tired of waiting. We've heard promises the past several elections that if you elect a Republican House and you elect a Republican Senate, it's going to make a difference. Well, these voters, and I'm talking about Republican and conservative voters out there, I'm not talking about Democrats or independents so much, they're angry and saying, we just haven't seen any result of the action that's been taken so far. Yes, we agree. It would be great to control absolutely everything, all three legs of the three-legged stool, President, Senate, and House. But, you know, divided government is very often a fact of American political life at the federal and state level. And you don't just stop everything because you don't have control of everything. You've got to keep pushing forward and get some things done, even if it's a compromise with your opponents that leaves everybody mildly dissatisfied. At least it's something. Right now, it appears, and for the past couple of years, nothing or very little has been done.
I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about GOP politics with Bill Ballinger, editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter. And our next caller is Jimmy in Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy.
Morning.
Morning.
Yeah, it seems to me that a lot of the Republicans feel that that they're just not using or not delivering the message in a manner that voters are willing to accept. But I think it's the message itself. I voted Republican for president ever since 76 to 2004, but it just seems the party has gone so far right in the last 10 years with the warmongering and fearmongering. And it used to be a party of low budgets, but they don't seem to be even being able to accomplish that. So I think it's more the message itself than the delivery, and I'll take my comments off the air.
And so the problem is the GOP message, Bill Ballinger?
Well, you've heard some talk along that line in the last few days since John Boehner quit. They're saying, you know, it's not so much John Boehner or the problems between John Boehner and the 40-member conservative bloc in his caucus. It's their message or lack of message or poor messaging. But I tend to agree with your caller. You know, it's not so much the message, it's the substance of what they've done or haven't done. No amount of talk, no amount of messaging is going to cover over the lack of achievement by this Congress, or the Congress, for that matter, before it, which was divided because the Democrats still had control until this year in the Senate. So, you know, your caller is emblematic of many people, I think, in the Republican Party, and that is they were historically Republican voters. Your caller said through 2004 that would have been the second Bush run for president, re-election by George W. over John Kerry. But then apparently in 2008 and 2012, he voted Democratic, or at least he didn't vote for the Republicans at the presidential level. And, you know, I think there are some Republicans out there that have been lost to the party because the party has moved more and more to the right. And the people who are causing problems right now for John Boehner in the Republican caucus are Republicans in districts that Republicans, frankly, have not ever held for literally 80, 90 years. I mean, this is the most members that the Republicans have had in the U.S. House of Representatives since 1928. This is the biggest majority they've had in 85 years. Well, I mean, if that's the case, it means there are a lot of people in the Republican caucus who are probably, I'm not going to say they're artificially there, but they're not there from districts that historically necessarily have been Republican. And when they get in, you would think they'd be acting in a more moderate, independent way because they'd have to appeal to Democrats in their districts and independents, because they're in marginal or swing districts, but they're not. They're really voting a very hardline conservative position on a lot of issues, and we'll have to find out in 2016 if there's going to be the pendulum swinging back by voters on the left and the liberal side of the spectrum, Democrats and more liberal-tinged independents against the Republicans. That's one of the great questions that will be answered in November and next year.
John Boehner said yesterday that he's not ruling out a vote to raise the nation's borrowing limit before he quits in about a month. Conservatives may demand a bone for raising the debt ceiling, possibly, again, funding for Planned Parenthood being cut off. What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, people are saying that since Boehner has announced he's resigning at the end of October, that he's free at last and that he doesn't have to worry about people deposing him or anything because he's deposed himself. So, again, we get back to that issue I referred to at the beginning of our conversation this morning, and that is if all the Democrats vote to raise the debt ceiling and John Boehner can just get, I'm not going to say a handful, but if he can get, you know, maybe one-third of the Republican conference to agree to raise the debt ceiling, well, he's got a majority right there, 218 votes. Two-thirds of his own caucus could vote against raising the debt ceiling and it won't make any difference.
In December, Boehner will be out of the picture and a new speaker will be in place. Any reason to believe that a more long-term spending deal could be achieved?
Well, with a new person, if it is Kevin McCarthy, we don't know absolutely for sure that it will be, but let's assume that it is. Look, hope springs eternal. And, you know, he's a new person by himself. He can't make things happen. He's got to work cooperatively with Mitch McConnell in the Senate. He's got to work with minority Democrats to a certain extent. And obviously, President Obama is a major factor. Let's put it this way. If some things do happen under a Kevin McCarthy that haven't happened under John Boehner for a long time, Kevin McCarthy will look like a miracle worker. He will be given a lot of credit, I think, by the public and the news media and everybody else for making a difference. But we don't know that that's going to be the case.
Kevin McCarthy, meanwhile, the leading candidate to replace Boehner, was interviewed on Sean Hannity's Fox News show yesterday. And McCarthy gave Boehner a grade of B-. And then he said that I guess what he was saying is that he credited the Benghazi committee for hurting Hillary Clinton's poll numbers, and he pointed that to that as an example of the kind of leadership he will provide. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily a ringing endorsement of his leadership abilities. I think he might have picked better examples, but maybe that's the real point of all this. There isn't anything much better than that. I think, frankly, the Benghazi hearings probably have been injurious to Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration, but to me, that shouldn't be the signal achievement of a particular majority caucus at any point in time. There are other things that seem to me that are bigger fish to fry. Kevin McCarthy was in a situation with John Boehner when he was on Fox News where, you know, Boehner had just endorsed him as his successor. I mean, Boehner could have been just neutral on this whole subject, but he's endorsed Kevin McCarthy. You almost kind of wonder whether, you know, certainly among the 40-odd Republican members who caused Boehner so much problem, that Boehner's endorsement of anybody would be the kiss of death. You would think that somebody like McCarthy would just as soon say to Boehner, hey, thanks, but no thanks. Keep your endorsement to yourself. I'm sure they worked it out, and I'm sure McCarthy decided, you know, when you get right down to it, Boehner is actually supported and liked by the majority of the Republican caucus, and it's a net plus to get his endorsement, and I'd rather have it than not have it, even if it's going to irritate the 40 people that caused Boehner problems, because that means it might cause me problems too. I think McCarthy has got to make his own peace with these 40 or so members. He started to do that. He's met with them. They know him. You know, I think they've got some hope that they're going to be able to get something or some things from Kevin McCarthy that they want. Maybe it's just minor tactical things, procedure. Maybe it is messaging to a certain extent that they weren't getting from John Boehner. And if they feel as time goes on that they are getting that sort of commitment from McCarthy, they'll be happy with him and they'll allow him to stay. And he'll potentially get stronger as a speaker, but we'll wait and see whether that happens or not.
We are talking with Bill Ballinger, editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics Newsletter, a former Michigan state representative and senator. He also served as deputy assistant secretary of the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare under President Gerald Ford. We are talking with him about the future of the Republican Party and GOP politics in light of the resignation of House Speaker John Boehner. And we'll talk more about the rise of the outsider GOP presidential candidate and talk more about developments on the presidential campaign trail as well. And we'll welcome your thoughts and questions about the future of the Republican Party at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about how the resignation of Speaker John Boehner what that will mean for the future of the Republican Party and national legislation, and also welcoming your thoughts and questions about the latest developments on the GOP presidential campaign trail. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. You know, Bill Ballinger, the last time we talked with you, it was in May, and it was about Governor Scott Walker's commanding lead among Republicans in Iowa. And here, today's not even in the race. What was your reaction to his downfall?
Again, shock, really, that it happened that quickly and decisively and finally. I was actually on Mackinac Island, not that far away from Wisconsin, at a biennial Republican conference just 2 weeks ago. It's held every 2 years in the fall of odd-numbered years since 1957, believe it or not, back in the Eisenhower era. And Scott Walker was scheduled to be the keynote speaker at the Friday night dinner kicking off the three-day conference. And first of all, he pulled out of that, claimed he had a conflict, and they rescheduled him for Saturday morning at the breakfast, and then he pulled out of that, and everybody was scratching their heads up there. Other people attending the conference were Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz and Carly Fiorina and Rand Paul and John Kasich. And next thing we knew, 24 hours later, Scott Walker was out of the race. I mean, it happened, boom, just like that weekend. And he went from being somebody scheduled to be the keynote speaker, that was scheduled 2-3 months ago when he was riding high. And many people are ascribing his demise as a candidate to Donald Trump.
And do you think that was the case?
Well, I think that was a major factor. I think Trump has shaken up the race. I think he's hurt a lot of the other candidates in the race. I don't think, frankly, there appeared to be that much speculation that Scott Walker was the one hurt the most when Donald Trump rose this summer in the polls and in prominence and in news coverage. They cited other people that they thought had been hurt more, like Ted Cruz or maybe a couple of the other minor candidates. But really, ex post facto, people are looking at what happened and saying Scott Walker was maybe the one that was hurt the most. Part of that, I think, was that he didn't distinguish himself in the debates. He didn't make any mistakes, but he was bland and blah, and he didn't get much time, and he didn't stand out. And apparently he, you know, raised some early money, but he spent lavishly in ways that weren't very cost-effective. And I think he looked at what things were going to be like going forward. He looked at whether he could continue to raise money. I mean, that's what a lot of this is about. And I think he saw all the money drying up and his donor base shrinking rapidly. And I think he saw the handwriting on the wall. It wasn't so much how badly he was doing at the time he got out, although he was doing badly. It was that he just didn't think he'd have a chance to ever recover. And he decided, I'm going to cut my losses while I still can.
An NBC News poll released on Sunday shows Trump with a one-point lead over Ben Carson. I think that was the same poll that showed Carly Fiorina tied for third place with Marco Rubio. What do you make of where the Republican race is today?
Again, back to what I said a few minutes ago, I mean, look at those top three, Carson, Trump, and Fiorina, not counting Rubio. They, in the polls over the last couple of weeks, have pretty much commanded a majority of polling sentiment among Republican presidential primary voters nationally and in many individual states, meaning they're outsiders. They are not people who've ever been elected to office. One of them, Fiorina, has run, at least. She ran for U.S. Senate in California in 2010 and lost to an incumbent. But Trump and Carson have never run, and none of them have ever served in public office, and yet they are leading collectively over 13 or 14 other candidates, depending on how you're counting and who was still in the race at a particular time. Several candidates, as you know, have dropped out, not just Scott Walker, but Rick Perry. There are a couple of others it's hard to know, like Jim Gilmore, the former Virginia governor, whether he's still in the race or not, or they're non-factors like George Pataki. But all those people have a lot of experience, and yet they're not commanding any kind of allegiance or following from people being polled. And so I think the status of the Republican race right now is that you've got people leading in the polls that reflect the disgust with Republican voters, with Republicans in government and with all of government. Obviously, they're very unhappy with President Obama and with Democrats in Congress, and they're angry, and they're looking for dramatic change, so dramatic that they're willing to buy a pig and a poke. They will take anybody who's not in office, and that means Donald Trump or Ben Carson or Carly Fiorina. Now, personally, I just don't think that's going to last. I think, you know, eventually you're going to find that one or more of these other candidates, whether it's Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush or John Kasich or whatever, are going to emerge. They're going to, first of all, raise money and be able to sustain a campaign over a long period of time. And I think whichever one of those candidates, maybe there's more than one, will be able to capture some of the anger that the electorate is feeling and channel that through their candidacy, even if they're establishment figures, even if they've been in elective office, in a way that makes them acceptable to the electorate, so that the electorate looks at this candidate, whoever it might be, let's say it's Rubio or Kasich, and looks at these people and says, okay, I know these people are politicians, they've been in office, they've got records, some of which we don't necessarily like that much, but they're speaking to my anger, they're speaking to my frustration and concern, and you know, I'm willing to give them a chance because they have convinced me they really know the score, they know how to operate, that they can be effective in government, and you know, really, when it gets right down to it, I don't want to go out on a limb and support somebody just out of frustration who's, you know, never held public office before, because I can't be sure such a person would be, you know, any more effective in voicing my frustration.
Let me go back to the phones. Larry in Kingston is with us. Hi, Larry.
Hi, good morning. I have the thought that would you hire an electrician if he didn't like to do electrical work? Would you hire a plumber that doesn't like to do plumbing? Would you hire a chef that doesn't like to cook? Why would you hire a Republican that doesn't like to govern? It's just beyond me. Hillary Clinton is smarter than all the people on the Republican Party put together. She'll be a far better president for the people, for all the people.
Thank you, Larry. But why would anybody hire a president who doesn't like government, Bill Ballinger?
Well, what he actually said is doesn't want to do electrical work or do plumbing. Remember, Fiorina and Trump and Carson say, well, we do want to do it for the first time. It's not so much that they don't want to do it. It's that they've never done it before. They have no experience. And your caller is probably right that you wouldn't hire an electrician who's never done any electrical work. You want somebody who's experienced. So, you know, I think that's, you know, valid. And that's one of the reasons why I just said, ultimately, I think Fiorina and Trump and Carson are not going to be the nominees, and you're going to find somebody who's had some experience. Now, Hillary Clinton is another matter. We could talk an hour about her, but, you know. That's
well, since we're focusing more on the GOP side, let's go to Joe in Milwaukee next. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I think it's really a misnomer to call these people conservatives. You know, the word itself is it has a noble history going back to Edmund Burke, and it's not a word that should be flung around for the types of characters we're dealing with. I think they're far better termed reactionaries. You know, they're people that just can't move on from reality. They want to do away with, for example, a woman's right to choose. They want to do away with, if they could, with birth control, Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, the list goes on and on. And really, it's tiresome listening to them. They're an embarrassment to this country, and really they're achieving nothing. But as I said again, they'd be better termed reactionaries rather than conservatives.
Your reaction to that, Bill Ballinger?
Well, I think he makes a good point. I think they are reactionary to many things. Some of the things they are reactionary against, however, are things that aren't necessarily that popular. You had one caller earlier this morning imply that Obamacare is a wild success that the public loves, and that everybody, majority public sentiment is behind it. Well, that's not the case. You know, polls show that that's not the case at all. In fact, Obamacare remains unpopular. So Republicans talk about repealing it. It isn't necessarily, a reaction against reality. Well, it is reality because Obamacare is legal. But they are trying to repeal it and or reform it and change it, they claim, if they ever get to that point. So some reaction isn't necessarily negative and bad. It can reflect popular opinion. If popular opinion doesn't like Obamacare or some of these other things, then it's up to one or the other of the parties to take a position in favor of getting rid of it and replacing it with something else. I'll just mention that Medicare, when it first passed back in the Great Society days of LBJ in the mid-60s, actually got a lot of support from Republicans in Congress at that time. So some of these things the Republicans aren't necessarily against. They don't think they're operating the way they should be operated. And, in fact, Republicans have claimed that Medicare is eventually going to go broke if certain things aren't done to fix it.
Bill, let me jump in because I have one more comment and very little time. Doug on Facebook writes, the GOP is becoming more conservative, and in my humble opinion, that's a bad thing. Just like the Democrats becoming more liberal or progressive. Extremes of all ranges are not good. In our final minute, Bill, do you see an extreme on one side or the other of coming through, I guess, as president?
Yes. You mean as a presidential nominee? Well, that's what we're going to wait and find out. I tend to think ultimately you're going to see nominees on each side that are nearer the middle than the extremes of each party that we're looking at right now running. I just don't see how Bernie Sanders, for instance, can get the Democratic nomination ultimately, and I don't see how the most conservative members on the Republican side can get the nomination. So I think you're going to end up with something like a Hillary Clinton or a Joe Biden as a nominee on one side, and I think you're going to end up with somebody like a John Kasich or a Bush or maybe even a Rubio on the other.
Well, that we'll leave it there, and we'll talk to you again. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joey.
Bill Ballinger is the editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics Newsletter. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program and to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production. Thank you for joining us. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with the author of Unfair, The New Science of Criminal Injustice.